Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome back to Charlton Live, sponsored by the British Institute of Kitchen, Bedroom and Bathroom Installation. We are returning from our break for the international break. Glad to be back here on the big match preview as we gear up for Saturday's home game with Reading at the Valley. Joining me to look ahead to that game, first up, top right, the man with the Charlton Live muff, Ben Cloak. How are you doing, Ben?
Hello, mate. I'm good. Usually after international breaks, it's a bit boring, but we've had a bit of everything, haven't we? We've had a bit of rugby, some Cricket World Cup, being Aston Villa under-21s. It's all been happening.
It's all been going on, yeah. I mean, I'm glad you brought up the rugby, because it was going to happen sooner or later. Also, join us, bottom of the screen, Tom Wallin. I'm not a massive rugby fan, if I'm being honest, Tom. So last I heard, Wales were one of the favourites to win the Rugby World Cup. How's that going?
Yeah, we weren't, but I mean, if you want to talk rugby, it's absolutely mental that England are the only unbeaten team in it, because they are awful. But
we've just got that magic touch, mate.
Yeah, and they'll probably win tomorrow against arguably the best team in the world. But there we go. Delighted to be back. So cheers for bringing that up.
Yeah, don't even know we're playing tomorrow, to be honest, mate. But there you go. thanks for joining us. So on this week's show, as I said, we'll have a bit of a catch up, really. As Ben mentioned there, there's been a lot going on whilst we've been away. A few little discussion points to discuss. We're going to hear from Mary Bashford from the women's team ahead of Sunday's home game with Crystal Palace. She's going to join us live on the show about 20 past seven. We're going to hear from the Elm Park Royals ahead of Saturday's game with Reading. Matt Lansley is going to try and give us a lowdown on what's been going on over at the Majeski Stadium. It's been a chaos, really. So we'll try and work out what's going on. Then, of course, we'll look ahead to that game from a Charlton point of view as well. We want to hear from you guys. Good evening to everyone who's joining us in the chat. Sam Cutts is in. Andrew's in there. All Hell Let Loose, Shiny Phil, Luke, Michael, Jay, Paul Davenport, along with many others. Let us know how you're feeling ahead of Saturday's game at the Valley. So our discussion points, I think we'll start off, Ben, with the fact that Anthony Hayes has left the club. Excuse me, this hasn't started very well. Tell us your thoughts on Anthony moving on, Ben.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, first of all, it's obviously a shame. He's been a good coach around the club. I can't remember how many years he's been at the club. He's been at the club a number of years now. I was looking at a lot of the comments underneath from players, former coaches, and said sad to see him go. So he's obviously a very well-liked character. And obviously we saw a glimpse of that last season when he helped us get to Old Trafford with Piercy as his assistant. But yeah, as it's sad, because as I said, well-liked guy around the club and obviously a proven coach, you've got to give Appleton his own people at the club so that he can succeed. We saw Jacko got given Terry Skiverton in his in the next season when he was in charge. We saw Ben Garner bring in, I can't remember his name now, the Scottish guy. But with Nigel Adkins, I think we shoehorned in like our own coaches in with him. And with Dean, I don't know if it was Dean's decision not to have anyone in with him. But I think it works when you bring in your own people. So Appleton's already bought in, is it O'Donnell, is it? I think, sorry, if I've got that wrong, already. But he'll look to bring in his own people. I know the club have been interviewing people already, but I think that is the right way to go about it. And as well, from Anthony's side, I'm sure he might have a different way of going about football, a different philosophy, a different mentality. and that might differ from the way Appleton plays. So they might have not clicked. They might have chatted about it and it might not clicked, and he's moved on. So again, wish him all the best. I'm sure we've seen that he's a great coach, youth level, as we've seen so many of youth players come through in his tenure at the club. But I also think the decision is a good one because, like, see Appleton bring in his own people so that he can really thrive being at the club, and we can really see him play his style of football the way he wants to do it.
Yeah, I mean, Shiny Phil's asking if we know why he left. Did he want to? Was he pushed? I mean, it seemed quite clear from the offset when Jason Pearce was made the interim manager with Anthony's assistant rather than the other way around that, you know, I don't think Anthony was massively in the first team plans. As we saw, he wasn't in the dugout as soon as Michael was here. I mean, there were sort of rumours maybe he was offered something back in the academy, which he didn't want. But I don't know for certain if that's true. Obviously, you don't always get the full insight with this sort of stuff that's going on in the background, Tom. But yeah, what do you think about it? Are you sad to see him go? I mean, people like Anthony, obviously, we hear a lot about our coaches, particularly when they're in the academy, because we have such a successful academy. We always hear a lot about how great they are. But I guess we never really get to see that emotion at a first team level for long enough to decide, and it's hard to tell exactly what role he played in the situation with Dean, you know, whether the lack of experience in the coaching setup as a whole was part of the reason that we were struggling under him. It's hard to tell, but what's your views on that leaving?
Yeah, I'm not overly sad, but at the same time, it's not like I'm pleased he's gone. He's someone who's been at the club for a long time. We're a club that traditionally has tried to retain Charlton people. You look at the long period that Jacko was with us, from player all the way up to manager. Jason Pearce, who you've referenced, who's now back in the youth setup, but I'm sure will go on at some point to manage the club again. Obviously done that one game so far. So you don't like to see these long-term people go. And I think the encouraging thing is, as you say, that the academy has churned out players before Anthony was here and hopefully will continue to do so. That's not to suggest he wasn't involved and wasn't a part of it, but it's to suggest that the academy can continue with other people around as well. So from that perspective, I'm not too worried about the academy itself. I agree with Benji's point to a degree around Appleton being able to bring his own people in. But on the assumption that we're not just going to keep a manager for a season and a half, and if we start next season badly, then Appleton's gone, because then you've got to reset the whole thing again anyway. And that's where having long-term people like Anthony, like Jason, like Jacko is an advantage, because they are the consistent thing that filters through the whole club. So that's always a concern. I know it's the way football's going now, and you know that Kerbs and Fergie and Wenger era is a long time ago, and I'm not suggesting that for a second, but Michael Appleton isn't going to do anything significant in, possibly he'll get us promoted to the Championship this year, maybe next year. But in terms of significance, in terms of stabilising us as a Championship club, he's probably going to need 2, 3, possibly 4 years. And realistically, as the stat Benji sent around just before this pod, that doesn't happen now, unless you do get promoted. So that's the challenge. That's the challenge now. If you do turn managers over and you turn staff over with them, there's a lot more people you're having to bring in and out on a regular basis. Whereas if you can have some consistency, kind of academy level and at coach level, and then you're just rotating the manager, it's different. But look, he's clearly done well for us. As I say, I'm not jumping for joy that he's left or anything like that. And hopefully he can go on and get a coaching role somewhere else and maybe kick on his career. If you're right that he didn't want an academy role, he's clearly looking at something else, and I hope he can go and do that.
There we go. You heard it first from Tom. Michael Appleton is going to be Charlton's next Alex Ferguson, taking over the mantle from Guy Luzon, who was, of course, our last Alex Ferguson, according to Katrine. Excellent news. Right, let's move on to the next subject. The FA Cup draw. Absolutely fantastic that we've got Cray Valley Paper Mills coming to the Valley. It's one of the few games, in fact, I think it would have been the only possible fixture in the FA Cup where, if we'd been drawn away, it would have actually been a shorter journey for me to go to the game than having to traipse all the way down to the Valley in like 15-minute drive away. But what a great draw that is. I mean, five divisions below us. It would have been fantastic if it was away from home, Ben, because, we probably would have lost knowing us, but it would have been a proper FA Cup tie that almost certainly would have been on TV. I think the fact we're at home in front of what will be a vastly empty Valley will take some of the shine off it. But that result, that draw, is exactly what the FA Cup is all about. I was working the Bromley game the day before, and I was texting Radio London's guy at Cray Valley Paper Mills saying they're going to get Charlton now, because the manager said before the game he wanted Charlton. And when that draw came through, I was absolutely delighted, because that's what it's all about, Ben.
Oh, mate, yeah, totally. I mean, me and you live local, so they're very local to us. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if you saw as well, Kevin Lisby's son plays for him, and there was a video of him watching the draw through on his phone, and he went absolutely berserk when he found out it was Charlton. I didn't know the manager as well wanted Charlton. I guess you would want Charlton being a local club. And I also saw that stat that we're 5 leagues above them, but only 4 miles away from them. So it's a pretty amazing stat. So, yeah, no, I actually think the crowd will be boosted from a usual FA Cup tie, because you'll have loads of local people that might not even be interested in like Charlton or at all, but might want to come along because it's such a local game and just are interested in the local area and can see it as a real underdog story. Amazing that after what he did for the club. And one of those. That's why the FA Cup's the best competition, isn't it? When we can draw a team like that in the cup. And as I said, I'm sure the crowd will be a bit boosted, but I know what you mean. It will be not as great for them, but just amazing for them to play at a stadium like the Valley, eh?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of local rivalries come to the fore, even when it's like a non-league team like this. You may have seen a tweet from Nick Godwin from BBC Radio London saying they had Mike from Cray Valley Paper Mills on the show during the week, and he said, we're mainly Millwall fans down here, so honestly, we're going to the Valley looking for a win. That would be nice if we could absolutely batter them, just to, we could finally claim we've beaten Millwall. Could we take that?
I mean, that's probably the only way it's going to happen, isn't it? So, I don't know if he was telling the truth or if he was just doing it to wind the Charlton fans up. But like Benji, it's just a great occasion. I know the Charlton side of the crowd is going to be pretty low, and that's frustrating, but it's just the way those early rounds are now. But and I've just seen Dean's put it in the chat as well, if they can price it right, could do well for Cray, could get numbers up. I don't know if it'll be on telly as well, which might change things because it's that local derby. So there's a few factors in there, but just as a game itself, it's exciting. And at this level, you kind of just you're looking at the third and fourth rounds, aren't you, and thinking, can you get a decent team? So to have somebody who on paper we should be beating in the first round, it is good. But as you say, it's not as simple as that. But with people coming back, I don't know if we're going to talk about injuries later, but with some of the players coming back and stuff, it's an opportunity to maybe rotate as well, which is an option, get some players up to speed. So we've got to look at it as a positive. I know it's another game, but an exciting one.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, Dean's saying, I hope the club put the tickets at an attractive price so that Cray Valley can earn some money. Shiny Field saying, looking forward to seeing Lisby Jr. playing at the Valley, which will be, it's just a great, great story. Michael said, Middle Park is a proper scummy Millwall supporters area. It's where I live. I should know. I don't know why you listen to your pod if you're a proper scummy Millwall supporter then, Michael. But thanks for joining us. Paul Davenport saying on paper. Yeah, it's a winnable tie. I'll put it that way. It gives us a chance of progression to the next round. Would obviously be the greatest embarrassment in the history of the club if we don't, but there we go. Some other news while we've been away. We've actually signed a goalkeeper. Sam Walker signed. We know that Harry Eistead was out for a number of weeks. Sam signed, I think, up until January. 32-year-old, he's a bit of a giant. He's a local boy born in Gravesend. Latest team he's been with is with Kilmarnock for a couple of seasons, played 29 times in the league for them. He's had spells with Wimbledon, Reading, Colchester, Northampton, Yeovil, Bristol Rovers. He was in the Chelsea youth setup as a lad without ever making a league appearance. Obviously, we know the situation we're in with Harry being out, Ben. I guess your main question will be what his distribution like, because that's the only thing you seem to care about when it comes to goalkeepers.
Well, it's what happens now with goalkeepers. It's all about the distribution. Come on, you should know that. Yeah, look, I can't say I'm buzzing with the sign. I was quite surprised by it, to be fair. But the more you think about it, I think this season we've got a lot of competition for places all over the park now, much better than last season, especially when you see pictures of Pan Kamara coming back into training this week. And obviously, it is a blow having Iced out because he, in true Charlton style, he makes an amazing performance, great saves, and is then out for a number of weeks, maybe months. So that was a shame to see. But the club are saying, right, well, we need some competition for Maynard Brewer's place. Is putting Henry Molyneux in there on the bench going to stunt his growth? Does he then stop playing under-18s football? Because that's on a Saturday morning when he's at the Valley in the afternoon. You can't do that, really. And he's just signed a new contract himself. So we look at that and think, well, actually, this guy's available. Obviously, the scouting network have looked at it. I quickly looked on Kilmarnock's Twitter page and they seemed quite like him last season. Made a few good penalty saves, I saw as well. He's a big lad, as you say. So, yeah, if he can offer us something, he can offer that competition for place, spur Maynard Brewer on. I think last season, I was thinking about it, when Maynard Brewer was in the team, you just knew that Dean didn't fancy Jojo, did he? He never wanted to put him in. Never seemed like Jojo was going to push Ash out of the team. So, yeah, at least this time we've got someone who can give him a bit of a fight for a spot in the club. But, yeah, I think it's a positive move. But also, yeah, let's hope Iced isn't out for too long. But maybe that seems like he is.
Yeah, I mean, Sam's asking if we have any update. I mean, the last I heard, it wasn't it 4 to 6 weeks we saw reported a little while ago. I don't know if there's any change in that. I'll put it in the chat, Tom, and asking if our goalkeeper department is strong enough overall. I mean, Andrew Roth is saying Sam Bartram didn't need competition for his place, but obviously that was a different kettle of fish back in those days. Footballers were indestructible, apparently. And, I mean, in this day and age, it is. I mean, the reason I asked that question, Tom, is, I mean, I was just sort of catching up on the forums and stuff after the new goalkeeper Sam Walker arrived, and I was seeing some people questioning if that is, you know, even before he came with Harry and Ashley, if that's a strong enough role in our team. With some people saying it was, you know, we've got enough there to do what we've got to do. Some people saying it's not. You know, I have my opinion, which I'll hold off for now. Just want to hear what you think of it. You know, do we have a, assuming both of those were fit and Sam wasn't here, is our goalkeeper department strong enough to get us to the right end of the table?
To be honest, I think my answer is I'm not sure. I certainly haven't seen enough of Harry Iced. That I know he had an amazing performance on telly at a business end of a season, but prior to that, I'd never heard of the guy. So if I was basing it on that game, yes, he's one of the world's greatest keepers, but obviously if you take into account the rest of his career, you're not sure. With Ash, there's obviously a reputation. There's the I think it was the Rob Elliott interview about him, which we've come back to a few times, about his potential. But he's still very young, and sometimes it takes time to get up to speed to a goalkeeper. So my honest answer is I'm not sure. I think with regards to the third choice keeper, you look at it and you probably want somebody who's happy to, you know, maybe in their mid-30s, they're an experienced goalkeeper. They're happy to sit on the bench at best most of the time, but also have the competence that they can fill in if needed. Or, like Benji says, you go with a youngster, but then you risk them not having much involvement and losing out on their development. So, in terms of them as individuals, I think they've both got aspects of their performances that are very good. They've probably also got bits they need to develop. So, I certainly wouldn't, if I was listing the best keepers in the league, I probably wouldn't have either of them up there. But I don't think it's an... I don't think if we didn't get promoted, that would be the sole reason we didn't go up either. So, yeah, they're okay League One goalkeepers based on what I've seen so far. I don't think we've had enough sample size of either yet. So, yeah, not a very good answer, but the truth is I'm just not sure.
Yeah, we're really sitting on the fence there, Tom. But I think that's a fair answer, to be fair. I like Ash, you know. I know he's had his moments and Ben, the distribution police, not too happy with that. But I think he's okay. Obviously, same with Tom. We haven't seen enough from Eisted yet. The one game he admitted himself where he made saves was the one where he's ended up, unfortunately, getting injured. I mean, Martin's saying Eisted's are made of tough stuff, which is good. So hopefully he'll be back. But back in fighting fit when he's available. Trevor saying we can't fault the club looking for a short-term safety valve. Probably unfair to throw a youth keeper out there at short enough notice. Yeah, we had is it Harry Molyneux on the bench for one of the games recently. The fact that we don't even remember his first name suggests, you know, we haven't seen a great deal of him in the first team environment at all yet. 76 Rufus saying, looking at Beadle's progress, why did we let him go? Well, we didn't want to let him go. I think Brighton sort of snapped him up and he was at that age where he could go where he wanted, and they had to pay like the compensation fee for him. But yeah, I don't think we wanted him to go at all. Shiny Phil saying, I'm happy with the goalkeeper situation as it is now. If I was the manager, I'd make another call at the end of the season. Dean saying goalies don't reach their peak until they're in their late 20s, early 30s. Would have liked to have someone with more experience rather than Eisted and Ashley Maynard Brewer. Right. Just very quickly before we hear from our guest in a few moments' time, Ben, I didn't watch the Aston Villa game. I didn't go to it, which is unheard of for me, but I was not babysitting because it's my own child, but I was at home looking after my daughter. So I didn't even bother watching it. What did you make of it? We won 4-2. It's a couple of weeks ago. It's only the EFL trophy, so not the most important occasion. Charlie Kirk scored, which was a nice surprise. What was the game like, Ben?
I wasn't, I mean, like the crowd that were there, I watched it on the stream. I wasn't jumping up and down when we scored or clapping or making a loud noise. I mean, that would be a bit weird in my living room, wouldn't it? But minutes for key players. I mean, Miles Leeburn got minutes, scored two goals. Charlie Kirk got minutes. Scott Fraser got minutes. It was sad to see that youngster go off with an injury, but that made Tenai Watson come on and he got key minutes. And then well-taken goals. I mean, as you said, Charlie Kirk scored. Scott Fraser, what a great ball over the top. He finished it really well. Leeburn obviously scored a penalty. He made the penalty, first of all. Took the penalty well. And then his other goal, he took really well. A touch, turn, bang, goal. You're going to think I'm amazing. I've got an amazing memory, but I literally just watched it again before I turned on. And then Louis Watson scored as well, which was great to see because we've all been really impressed with him of late. And now he's added a goal to his game. So it gives us a different dynamic for us to watch him. But yeah, he took his goal really well. So and then after that, we brought on some big guns and then conceded two and they missed the penalty. If we're talking goalkeepers, obviously it's not great to see Ash concede straight from a corner. So I'm sure he will be annoyed with that. And I think, obviously, Appleton probably had a bit of a go at him after for conceding two like that and could have been three if they scored the pen. But no, loads of positives to take with minutes. Leeburn getting two goals and well-taken goals. So, I enjoyed it, mate.
Yeah, excellent. Is that why we went immediately and signed a 6'6" goalkeeper just to prevent us conceding directly from corner kicks? I mean, that is firefighting at its very best. Right. I told you we've got a special guest. Charlton Women are at home on Sunday against Crystal Palace at the Valley. Big South London derby. I'm delighted to say now that we're joined by the Addicts midfielder, Mary Bashford. Mary, thanks for joining us on Charlton Live. How are you this evening?
Hiya. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for joining us. It's a big game on Sunday at the Valley. Any game against Palace is big for us, but you know, the start to the season that both sides have had, particularly for Charlton now, unbeaten in four, winning away at Blackburn last weekend. It's a nice bit of momentum that the girls are on now, and I guess you'll be hoping to continue that this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. Palace have definitely had a good run at the moment too. They've like been beating teams by lots. So we know like what threats they have. They've been very clinical. So yeah, derby games are always big. And we definitely be wanting to get the 3 points again this weekend.
Yeah. How have you seen the start to the Charlton season? It started ever so slightly slow. I mean, it's three games without a win at the start of it. But since then, you haven't really looked back with those last four. Like I say, that was a great win away at Blackburn last week. You've had an outing at the Valley already this season. How have you looked at the start of the campaign all together?
Yeah, I think we probably didn't start at our best, but I think every game we're improving, like building from every game, every week we're just building a little bit more. So yeah, we're just working hard on the training pitch as well. So we're hoping that we can just showcase all the hard work on the training pitch and keep this good run and good form going.
Yeah, and obviously this is a big season for you personally. You only recently signed your first professional terms with the club, having come up through the Addicts Academy. I mean, how does it feel to be out there and playing in the first team now?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think being a young player, like obviously I'm still learning so much and I'm quite new to the Championship. So it's great to get lots of minutes. And I feel like I'm learning so much at the moment. So grateful that I can get more minutes for the first team and hopefully pave the way and be a bit of a sort of role model to other academy players at Cheltenham that it's like you can always make it to the top. Yeah,
and obviously we've signed quite a few experienced players in the summer as well. The likes of Longhurst, obviously, is joining, who's had long time in the WSL. So I guess do you feel like the Karen's sort of found the right balance in the squad this year?
Yeah, definitely. I always have chats with the older players as well to just get more learn more from them because they've got so much more to offer when it comes to like experience and especially in the WSL as well. Like Kate's had lots and lots of appearances in the WSL, so yeah, I feel like they're a very good players to learn off and they balance out the squad well. So yeah, I'm grateful to have players like her in the squad.
So obviously coming through the academy and I guess sort of knowing that the dynamics of the Cheltenham Palace relationship over the years in the men's and women's games. I guess you know how much Sunday will mean to the fans. I mean, there's been run-ins and arguments between the two teams over the years, which I found myself in the middle of once. But how important is this game? Like I say, Palace are scoring for fun this year. Like they've had a 9, they've had a 6 and a 4, I think, recently already. So how do you approach this game with playing the game, I guess, and not the occasion?
Yeah, it's never a quiet game between us and Palace, is it? I think like we know that they're going to show up, but we'll show up too. And it's good to have it at the Valley as well. We know that all our fans will be down there, so hopefully giving us a bit of a upper edge. And we're always going to show up for a big derby game like this. It's going to be competitive, but I'm looking forward to it. And playing in front of a home crowd is always something to look forward to. So. Yeah, it'll be a big game, but hopefully one we can come out on top of.
Excellent stuff. So that's 2 p.m. at the Valley on Sunday. Mary, thanks for your time on Cheltenham Live this evening. Just go and get the job done on Sunday and we'll all be happy.
Thank you. Will do.
Cheers. There we go. That's Mary Bashford from Cheltenham Athletic. Women looking ahead to Sunday's game with Palace at the Valley. I've got time to ever so slightly go into the situation I found myself with Palace women a few years ago, where we were playing away at against Palace women at Bromley on the same day that Bromley sacked their manager and Cray Wanderers, who also play at Hayes Lane, sacked their manager. So I made a joke on Twitter, all we got to do is beat Palace like 10-0 and they'll sack their manager as well. Palace didn't like it and tried to ban me from the ground that day. So, yeah, even when I try to be nice and funny and drum up some interest in a game, I still managed to find myself on the wrong side of something. Anyway, right, let's have a quick break. When we come back, there's loads to turn our attention to, of course, with Saturday's home game against Reading coming up. We'll see you in a few moments' time. Thinking about a new kitchen or bathroom? Find professional, independent local installers with free home surveys, itemised quotes and protected payments, trading standards approved contracts, and workmanship warranties. The British Institute of Kitchen, Bedroom, Bathroom Installations accredits installers to ensure they are police checked, fully insured, and experienced. Take the risk out of home improvement. Visit bikbbi.org.uk.
Hello fellow addicts, I'm so excited to tell you all about our micropub, The River Ale House. The River Ale House is based in East Greenwich. It has 6 Pub of the Year awards, an ever-changing selection of amazing beer. It's owned by Cheltenham fans, walkable to the ground in just 20 minutes with buses that go direct to the Valley too. If your matchday routine includes a drink with your friends, you must join your fellow addicts in the river. See you soon.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There you go. Welcome back to Charlton Live here at the big match preview, gearing up for the home game with Reading on Saturday. I was just filling Tom in on the situation with the Palace manager who I accidentally insulted. He's not there anymore, unfortunately, for him. Michael says, typical Palace behaviour, to be fair. Absolute nerds. there we go. Excellent stuff. Right, we are playing Reading at the Valley on Saturday. Normally we get a guest on live, like we just had with Mary there from an opposition pod. Unfortunately, the Elm Park Royals couldn't come on live this evening. So I sat down with Matt Lansley on Tuesday evening for a bit of a catch-up, just to try and work out exactly what on earth has been going on over at Reading. It's been a real tough few years for them, as I'm sure you're all well aware. And it's not been a great start to the season on the pitch or off it either. So let's have a listen to my chat with Matt from the Elm Park Royals. He will fill us in a little bit more. On Charlton Live by Matt Lansley from the Elm Park Royals. Matt, thanks so much for joining us ahead of Saturday's game at the Valley. We get a correspondent from the opposition on every week on Charlton Live. Unfortunately, you've probably got the most detailed and interesting story of the lot. Before we even think about talking about football, you know, relegation last year, financial worries, protests, points deduction, the threat of administration. You Royals fans have been through it over the last few years. Can you give us an overview on what's been going on at the Mad Stad?
An overview, how to keep this short. It's just been death by a thousand cuts is, I think, the best way to put it. You know, you can go back to John Medeski, really, and when he first sold the club to Anton Zingarevic, realistically, that's where problems started. That's where debts started mounting up. That's where over excessive expenditure started. He famously obviously brought in some Russian players on massive wages, couldn't pay them, then had to sell the likes of Adam Lafondra to pay tax bills and the likes. Ties come in, didn't have the money. They were nice people, didn't have the money, but then Mr. Dye has come in and just kind of put every nail possible into the coffin and put every last cut really into a fan base. It's been a slow decline over multiple years, again, through unbelievable expenditure. You look at the ridiculous amounts that they've spent on transfers, and then not helped by the fact not communicating with the fans. He's apparently a very private man. We now know why he's a private man, because he's a crook out in China, wanted by Chinese authorities. He's in hiding, essentially, in the UK because of it. Yeah, just not a very nice man. That led to transfer embargoes, points deductions, and obviously where we are now, really, which is our third season, I think it is, straight of a transfer embargo. We've still got, I think, another three windows to serve. Haven't signed a player for a transfer fee since 2020, and that player was only there or was only allowed because it was agreed the previous summer. It's just been dismal. That's probably the briefest overview I could probably give without boring to death.
I mean, it's been going on for ages as well, hasn't it? So I did one of your games at QPR about two, three seasons ago when Paunovic was the manager, and at that time, was
the lovely 4-0.
It was an enjoyable game to work, but from at the time, I mean, the discussion was, they can't even sack their manager because they can't afford to within FFP. Eventually, they did, but yeah, it has been dragging on for a long time.
It wasn't just FFP. Mr. Dye had Paunovic resigned, but Mr. Dye rejected it and literally kept him there for about 4 weeks. FFP was a concern, but Mr. Dye was handed a resignation from Paunovic about 4 or 5 weeks prior to when he actually got the boot, or they mutually decided that you can find you're released, the chains are off. You know, he was pretty much left there as a punching bag, really.
Excellent. Well, so as you can see, it's all been good news then for the last few. I mean, what is likely to happen next? I mean, the threat of administration was spoken about. There's chat that a man with a very big beard, William Story, might get involved. I'm not a follower of Formula One, but a lot of people who seem to know about Formula One suggested that he wouldn't be a great person to have involved if he were to come in and take over as well.
No, sadly, I am a follower of F1 and remember the debacle at Haas when Rich Energy came in and very quickly decided to come out, which we found ironically was because Red Bull didn't want a leading market competitor in F1. So they basically pushed him out or told him not to join F1, which I find is quite amusing from an energy drink that you can't even find or buy anywhere. When clubs are in crisis, the vultures circle, right? You know, I think our only saving grace is that, you know, he's tried to take over two clubs before, failed at both of them. There are other parties that are interested. There's about 3 or 4 different parties, I think, including his. I think the most worrying thing is, I think he's just wasting time, and he's wasting time really that the club doesn't have, because, you know, we are teetering on the edge. A couple of months ago, apparently our sponsors, Select Car Leasing, paid the wages for the players because, again, the owner doesn't have the money because he can't get out of China because all of his assets are frozen. It's just chaos. The sooner an owner can come in, the better. But then you have kind of the worries about who that next owner might be, because we're in a desperate situation. And when you're in a desperate situation, can you be that picky or choosy over owners? All you can do is hope that the EFL fully vet, ratify kind of those who come in. Sadly, they failed 3 times previously with the owners that have come in at Reading. Hopefully that's, you know, we've had the last of our hideously long drain of medicine, and you know, we can finally start recovering.
I mean, it never quite got to the state it is at Reading with Charlton, but obviously we're a team that's been through that, and there's been plenty of others that have either come out the other side or like ourselves are hoping to at some point. So obviously we wish you the best of luck. It clearly affects what happens on the field as well. Lost 5 of the last 7 in League One, only one win in that time. I was surprised the Leyton Orient game. I saw a video of the reaction that the players get from the fans at full time. And is there a feeling that the players are culpable as well as the ownership at this moment in time? Because certainly we're getting short shrift from the away end after the defeat at Orient last time out in the league.
Yeah, it was a messy scene after Leyton Orient, but that's I think an accumulation of 11 months, or we're getting up to 12 months. In fact, we're over 11 months since our last away win. We've got 2 points from, I think it's our last 19 away from home, or 18 away from home now. We've lost, I think, our last 9 consecutively away from home. Away from home, it's just turgid, to be honest. You know, it's absolutely hopeless. And what that is, I don't know. All I can say is that, like, the last 2-3 seasons really away from home, I think we've seen about 6 away wins in total in about the last 3 seasons. It's just absolutely diabolical. And I think Leyton Orient was kind of just an accumulation of that, and because the way we lost at Leyton Orient, we've seen 1,000 times before over multiple managers, where you know, we're grinding it out. It looks like we're going to get a point, or sometimes it was potentially 3 points, those lovely days where, you know, we used to be ahead in away games. But we end up conceding in the last few minutes. I've lost count of the amount of times we concede in 85 plus minutes. And again, went to a defensive formation, went to five at the back from four at the back. And we've seen that, like I say, 1,000 times. It probably wasn't as directed as the players as maybe it kind of looked. I think it was just a lot of bottled up frustration and tension, to be honest, because it has just been so bad away from home for so long. You know, like I say, our last win away was the 12th of November last year. And
difficult times on the field of play. Obviously, Cheltenham fans will tend to hear someone speaking like that and obviously fear the worst for us. The record
every
we have
fan has said that so far. Yeah, so, I'm trying to say every week, so it's jinxed, but it hasn't worked yet.
Yeah, I mean, on the field, there must be some positives, I guess. Who would you say are your danger men going into Saturday? You've got your top scorer with 5, Kelvin something.
What's his surname?
There we go. I needed to hear someone say that. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, is he up there?
Yeah. No. Like, it's a weird place because at home the players seem to flourish and the home support has been really quite good this season. Fans are behind the players, and even away from home, you know, yes, it's a new league, and you know, fans are ticking off stadiums and what have you that goes about when you get new grounds to go to. But you know, we're taking, you know, a fair amount for Reading fans anyway, you know, fair amount of fans with us, and players that have kind of been brought in, you know, like Ia Bishman's come through the academy, but then you've got the likes of Dom Ballard, who's on loan from Southampton, 18-year-old, looks like he's got an absolutely sensational future ahead of him. He's quick on the ball, his movement's fantastic, his link-up play's really good. He's one of those players where you'll see pick up the ball like on the edge of the halfway line, and before you know it, he's at the back post waiting to try and tap it in. He's that sort of player. But then you've got others like Charlie Savage, who's come in again, 21 years old, I think, and kind of kicked on a bit from last year. Impressing, probably needs to be a bit braver with the ball to try and be a bit more progressive. He seems to just take safe passes, but he's really impressed as well. And like I say, Kelvin, he's started really well. He's reminding a lot of people of Lucas Schau for the last few years. He's big, he's tall, he's quite strong on the ball, got a turn of pace, but it's got a lovely touch and can link up play again really well. So kind of going forwards, they're the players. But then at the back, you've got the likes of Tyler Bindon, again, 18 years old, come in, first taste of first team football, started incredibly well. Got his first call up for New Zealand over this international break and got his first cap for them. Nelson Abbey as well, youngster, come through the academy, 19 years old, captain of the club now, as all the elder statesmen of the team. Obviously, left earlier in the transfer window, he's taken on the captaincy and has been absolutely fantastic. He's got pace, strong, good tackling. So there's a lot to really like for Reading fans about this team. There's just the biggest cloud just hanging over the club, though. And that's obviously the situation that we're in and the frustration that breeds, and kind of, I just want them to get this kind of chip off the shoulder with, you know, the away statistic, because it's terrible. It's utterly hideous, you know, when you look at it and kind of see kind of, you know, how bad it is and, you know, how bad it's been for such a long time. Maybe when one win comes, you'll see, you know, a few come in quick succession. But yeah, they just need to get that. They need to get that first win away from home and just try and kick on from there, because it's killing them. Because you compare home and away and it's chalk and cheese, really.
There we go. That's Matt joining us from the Elm Park Royals with a pretty sorry story. Unfortunately, it's been a dreadful few years at Reading. I mean, obviously, Matt's gone into the on-field problems, or the off-field problems, I should say, looking at the on-field situation. Obviously, haven't scored, haven't won away for nearly a year coming up now, Ben. And as I said in the chat, and as everyone's saying in the YouTube comments as well, almost certain that means that Reading will win on Saturday. Big money going on Reading, Dean said as well. We got to make sure we aren't the team that becomes a statistic breaker. So I guess the danger is going in with any level of complacency, because that's where you come unstuck.
Yeah, totally, mate. I mean, they've had some decent little wins this season, albeit at home. I know they beat Stevenage. Look, we've got to go into the game and forget where they are in the table, because there's a lot of off-field stuff that's happening, as we just heard there. And that's obviously playing a part, because they've been deducted a few points this season, which I know we can sit here and go, I'm glad it's happening to someone else, but it's not nice to hear. Football shouldn't be ran like that, should it? I mean, a guy who's flipping running away from another country and driving a club into the ground, it's not nice to hear. But look, we've just got to focus on the football side of things and take them as we see them. Tom just mentioned in the chat there, and I know Matt did there, with Robbie Savage's son coming through the Man United Youth Academy, someone who we should be watching out for. I just looked as well in the Pizza Trophy. They had a little local derby win against Swindon. Harvey Nibbs, who was a star for Cambridge last season, scoring a hat-trick. So that's going to give him a bit of confidence going into this. But look, we seem to be all on the attacking front at the moment. So it seems like it'll be another game where we can really attack a side whose confidence is really down. And we've got to approach the game like that. We've got to be on it from the first whistle, because we're playing against the team, as he just said, their confidence is as low as anything. They haven't won away from home in such a long time. So if we attack from the first whistle onwards, really go for them, then we're confident, mate. We are a confident side at the moment. We scored a lot of goals at home. We've got a massive attacking threat now, players to bring off the bench. A lot of players all fit now and raring to go, especially with Aniki, the cheat code that he is. Corey Blackett-Taylor in the form of his life. So we've really got to go at this team. And whereas like our last home game was against a decent side in Blackpool, I mean, they got a good result on the weekend as well. We're playing against a side who are low, and as you said, argued with their supporters at the end of the game in their last game. So it's a packed out away, isn't it, as well? So they don't want to be doing that at the end of the game again.
Yeah, I mean, that's become a bit of a recurring theme this season. On a Saturday evening, I find myself on Twitter looking at a Reading away end, having a proper go at their players, which, I asked Matt about it just to try and gain a bit more insight from their club's point of view. Because even at our lowest low in terms of, you know, the off-the-field stuff, when we had to throw, when fans were throwing stuff, obviously I didn't, when the fans were throwing stuff on the pitch and that sort of stuff, I felt like we still stuck with a team, supporting a team, not the regime, was always the quote. And it's got so bad at Reading now that sort of spilt into the players as well. And like I say, you're always seeing these Reading fans receiving apologies from their players at away grounds whilst giving them both barrels. And I think that's honestly, that's something that we'll have to try and take advantage as well, because that will affect their confidence. I mean, Matt mentioned some of the names, Kelvin Ehibisham was their top scorer. They've got Nelson Abbey was one who was mentioned as well. I visited Nelson Abbey. It's a lovely little National Trust location, actually. It's worth a go, that. But for all those players that Matt pointed out, I honestly think that they should be there for the taking, because I think it's not an easy place to be playing at the moment in a Reading shirt, Tom.
Totally. And like Benji says, we can't be complacent, but at the same time, we can't feel sorry for them on Saturday. Players have got to go there and smash them to bits. And then after the game, we can feel sorry for them as a club, because as you say, we've gone through similar, not to the same extent yet, luckily. But yeah, on Saturday, it's about that 90 minutes. And as you say, we should take the game to them. We should try and play on the fact that their fans are feeling like they are and reacting the way they are. Maybe they feel they're not getting, well, clearly with the losses, they're not getting the performances. There are incidents where we felt players were shirking responsibility for it. You know, the Reza sending off away, for example. You think, well, whatever. But as a whole, it never felt like majority of players weren't trying for us. So if they're seeing that, then they're entitled to obviously to voice that. But Yeah, I think we can't feel sorry for them on the day. We've got to go there, as Benji says, we've got to be professional. We can't be complacent, because if we do, then we will get picked off. We've seen that against teams already this season. But it's certainly one that you're looking at and you're thinking, okay, we should be continuing that unbeaten run. We're on a good run of form ourselves. And I think even if we were coming up a club who weren't in that chaos but were down at that end of the table, we'd still be looking at it based on our recent run of form and performances and thinking we should get a result out of this. So it's by no means a foregone conclusion, but at the same time, it's one that if we had to come on here on Sunday and we'd lost it, I think we'd all be very, very disappointed. It's not one where we'd go, well, that was fair enough. So if you think of it like that, then yeah, we should absolutely try and take it to them as early as we can and try and get an early goal and turn their fans on them as soon as possible.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew said in the chat, too much competition for places for any complacency. Certainly up the top end of the pitch, Johan's pointed out, you know, Lee Burn or Anike for us on Saturday. Lee Burn's young and good, on good form. Anike's fit, he's ready to start. Obviously, he started the game against Exeter City. Although, I mean, when he came off the bench against Blackpool, it feels like ages ago now, but that was just one of the best performances we've seen from him in the Charlton shirt. And that's even without scoring, you know. Again, it's a real tough one for Michael Appleton. They could both squeeze into the side with one of them playing, you know, with more likely Lee Burn sort of playing out right. But it was Lee Burn who started last time out. You know, he's been scoring goals recently, but didn't score against Blackpool. And that is that a decision you'd want to be making, Ben? How would you go there?
Well, as we just saw there from the comment. There's great competition for places. As you just mentioned, Lee Burn started last time out, obviously forgetting the Pizza Trophy game, but he scored two goals in that, so that'll give him confidence. But it's happened the same way, either way round, hasn't it? Like, you had Lee Burn start against Blackpool, and Chucks came on and was amazing and totally changed the game. And unlucky for him, he came close himself on a couple of occasions, and you just thought, God, if that went in, that would have given him such a boost. And I was sat right by the tunnel after that Blackpool game, and he was gutted after that he hadn't scored. And I looked at him and thought, why are you so gutted? Like, you've just made us come back in this game and draw against a good side. But he was just gutted because he hadn't scored. So I loved that hunger from him. But then in the game before, you had him start. I think he hit the bar, didn't he? And then we scored from the rebound, and he looked good against Exeter, but didn't score. And then Lee Burn come off the bench and scored a really well-taken goal. So this is, I mean, Dean Holden's probably going, flip, look at all the competition they've got now. I didn't have that. So it is tricky, isn't it? Because you can't start both of them, because the impact they make from the bench, I mean, as we saw against Blackpool, with the impact Chucks make and the impact Lee Burn made when he come on against Exeter. So it's tricky which one you start. I'd personally give it to Chucks at the moment, because I think he is just real chomping at the bit to get a goal. And we saw Lee Burn come on against Exeter. Okay, they were down to 10 men when he come on, and made an impact when he come on as well. And I just think if against the side with such low confidence, if Chucks is raring to go from that starting whistle, I keep saying starting whistle, don't I? From the start, then I really think that can real put him on the back foot. If you have someone like Chucks going at him right from the start, then as their confidence is low, then that can really put us on top. Then you bring Lee Burn on with the energy that he's got. I think that'll work in our favour. So, yeah, personally, I'd start with Chucks this weekend. Probably not Tillage. I saw the comment there. You'll probably ask that to Tom anyway. But, I won't let Tom answer that one. Sorry.
Yeah, well, Lou said, what about Tillage? So, well, I won't ask Tom that, just because, I mean, we've spoken about options up top. I sort of agree with what Dean's saying. Chucks is at his best when he comes off the bench. I run out of milk saying no Tillage on the wing. I'd rather have Tupac, which I think I'd agree with. As well, Alan Shepherd's just made a handful of really good points in a row, actually, so I'll try and go through them as well. But, you know, the obvious things we need to not do, the silly defensive mistakes. We did that last time out against Blackpool, and it's cost us points. Says no slow start as well, so this is an interesting one. You know, bearing in mind we have got another game on Tuesday, which we'll obviously talk about Sunday, but that is something that we'll be thought about as well when it comes with rotating those strikers. But I do wonder what Michael has to do, Tom, to get that 90-minute performance from his side, because every single game has been a 45-minute performance, I think it's fair to say, under Michael. And I'm not really sure how, you know, what he does to get that message across for longer. And now, I'm not saying that we have to completely dominate the game and spend 90 minutes camped on the edge of Reading's penalty area on Saturday, because that's just not how games go. Johan's asked a good question as well, which is down my list. But how do we make sure that we perform for, you know, 60, 70 minutes rather than 45, you know, a half and chalk and cheese halves, basically, which we've seen pretty much every game so far since Michael's come in?
I think he basically needs to go into that pre-match team talk as if we're 2-0 down. Because whenever we're losing and he goes in and gives a team talk, he gets a reaction out of them. So I don't know if it's carrot and stick, and actually they like, you know, they like being shouted at, they like being motivated by being criticised, if that's what he's doing at half-time if we're losing, or whatever. But yeah, obviously I didn't see the EFL Trophy game, where obviously we did start well, but the league games that I've seen, I can't remember too many where we've started well at all. Probably going back a few seasons, actually. So something does need to change. Of course, we've managed to come back, and we've talked about the fact that we've come back from losing positions twice in the past few weeks, having not done it for over a year. So we've shown we've got it in us. But as a fan, I'd rather not be in that situation. I'd rather go in against Reading 3 or 4 up. And as you say, then it's about maintaining it again. So I don't know if it is complacency. I think those defensive mistakes do play a part as well, because arguably the Blackpool game, we would have probably got a comfortable victory had it not been for that. So it's all they're all factors, and they're all, as you said, very, very relevant points. But yeah, I think if he can find that way to start quickly, as I say, this is a team that we can turn their own fans against them. I'd like to think the momentum would then be with us. I appreciate the EFL game that we dropped off, but it was an EFL Trophy game. It wasn't a league game, and I think this would be different. So yeah, if he can figure that out, I think we're onto something. And you know, before we get too critical of that, let's not forget that we are unbeaten under him. I know we've had to have a couple of comebacks and stuff, but we have put in some good performances, just not for a full 90 minutes yet. But yeah, it's early days for him, and it feels like it's coming.
Yeah, excellent. So Johan's asked a question, Fraser or Watson. Now, I think the way that Louis Watson's been playing recently, it would feel harsh to drop him, certainly. But Scott Fraser is the sort of player who could do something on his day. You know, mentioned it a lot last season. I always felt like there was a little bit more to come from him. But at the same time, I think 9 goals last season, a decent amount of assists. I can't remember exactly how many, but it's another area where we're just seeing a little bit of that depth now, especially with Pan coming back soon as well. As you mentioned, Ben, he's out there on the grass, as everyone likes saying now. But yeah, midfield and up top, we're stacked. It's just the back where I'm still slightly nervous. But yeah, Fraser or Watson for you, Ben?
Watson all day for me, mate. I think him and Dobson really complement each other in the middle. I love the way that they both spray the ball around and want the ball. They're very hungry players, and I think Watson really warrants his place there. I mean, the last couple of games, we had 2 back-to-back home games, didn't we? And I think he played really well in those games. As I said, he bagged the goal against Aston Villa as well. Look, I think Fraser is a great player. He's on his day, he's one of the best in the division. But I think his standards dropped last season. He wasn't consistent enough. But an aspect of that was we didn't have the competition to push him to perform every game. And now we have, as you said, Pan Kamara, again, on his day, he's smashed this division up. I mean, for Plymouth, he was one of the best players in this league easily. But again, suffers with injury. So we've got great competition. You've got Kuroi Anson there. He's probably buzzing now after he's just been away on international duty for Jamaica. So he'll be chomping at the bit to play. Unfortunately, Terry Taylor's injured. But there's still, as you said, a massive competition for places there. It looks like Alfie May will probably play in that number 9 role. So you've just got 2 players behind that. And I imagine it'll be Dobbo and Watson. I'd be disappointed if Watson got dropped for Fraser, because then you're basically just going on Fraser because of his history of being a good player in this league. Because on performances, Watson deserves to stay in there. And I think, yeah, deserves to keep going because he's played well lately. So, unless for injury's sake, you keep going. And then again, the result isn't going well for us. You've got these people to bring off the bench, and these players are performing because they know these players are on the bench. So it's a great headache for Mickey Apples to have.
Yeah, as you say, May in the 10 role. I mean, we can see where he got all his energy from this week in that video, drinking all that coffee. Half of it ended up down his shirt, apparently. But excellent. One last decision for us to make, and it's going to be put on you, Tom. Asimwe or Tanai Watson at right back. So Tanai, when he came off the bench against Wycombe Wanderers, brought energy, brought overlap. He obviously was replacing a Bankwer in that game and set up the goal for Tedic. But actually, he's had a couple of moments since then. I don't know if it's enough to say I want him to be dropped. But then when Asimwe came on against Blackpool, he was linking up really nicely down that right-hand side as well. So, yeah, decision for Mr. Tom Wallin to make there. And whatever you say, Mickey Apples has to do. That's how it works.
I was going to say, I didn't know I had this sort of power. as it's the only chance I'll get, I'll say me then, and I'll have a run out at 33. But I think probably I would stick with Watson. I think, you know, I've banged on about this for years now. I like the consistency, and he started the last league game, so I would just stick with that. I know we didn't win the game. I know we didn't keep a clean sheet, but there were other circumstances around that. Although he was potentially played a part in being at fault for the first goal. But I would stick with him. I think Asimwe has been brilliant. But even at the start of the season when he was playing a lot, we were saying, don't keep him in the firing line too much. As you say, he's an asset off the bench. The bench is a huge part of the game now with the five subs. So I'm not saying he doesn't deserve that spot, but if he can come on and change the game, then use him for that, like we've done with Chucks plenty of times. So I'd probably go Watson. So, lump on that if Mickey Apples is definitely doing what I say.
Excellent stuff. Right, fantastic. We've run out of time on this week's big match preview. Thanks for everyone who's joined us, either on the live stream in YouTube, leaving your excellent comments, or via the podcast afterwards. Make sure you subscribe both to our YouTube channel at Charlton Live and where you get your podcasts as well. We're on Facebook and Twitter and all that as well. Just follow us everywhere, and then you won't be able to lose us or shake us off, really. You have to watch all of our shows. Massive thanks to our guests today. We've heard from Mary Bashford from the women's team. They're playing Palace at the Valley on Sunday, 2 p.m. kickoff. We heard from Matt Lansley from the Elm Park Royals, of course, giving us the tale of woe, really. Unfortunately, that is the situation with Reading at the moment. We do hope it gets better for all of them. Massive thank you, as always, to Ben Cloak and to Tom Wallin for joining me this week. A pleasure to speak to you chaps.
Cheers, lads.
Enjoyed that. Thank you, everyone.
Excellent stuff. Don't forget, we're back on Sunday, 10 a.m. Live on YouTube, or you can catch up afterwards to look back at the game with Reading and ahead to Tuesday's trip to Lincoln. So we look forward to seeing you then. But thanks for listening to this week's Big Match Preview. I'm Louis Mendes. This has been Charlton Live, sponsored by the British Institute of Kitchen, Bedroom and Bathroom Installation. We shall see you on Sunday.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.